Welcome everyone, it's Tony Nash once again with Plugged and Unplanned, and today I have entrepreneur, author, inspiring human being, I could say, Mick Spencer with his book Start Before You're Ready, and he has a hell of a story, and I'm really looking forward to the next hour just chatting and finding out the way he thinks. Welcome, Mick.
Yeah, thanks for having me at Booktopia HQ.
No worries. So I will kind of touch on the book from time to time, but I think I am more interested, given you've got a hell of a story and maybe some people haven't heard about that, and given they can buy your book on Booktopia, and we have sold a lot of them, but maybe a lot of people haven't heard about you. And so just talk about, as you probably most normally do, the background, your early years. What did you have to overcome? We've spoken about it before, but just in your own words, where have you come from?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a Canberra born kid, now 28, so not longer.
That's not a disadvantage, is it?
No. Canberra's a great city.
Yeah.
But you know, to give a bit of, you know, geography, location. So look, I had some early challenges as illustrated in the book, and you know, I was born with severe short-sighted eyesight. So about 6 months into life, as a kid, I was crawling around a backyard and one day crawled into a broken terracotta pot plant, and mum and dad thought, what on earth is this kid doing? How did he not see it? And was taken to hospital and they diagnosed me with severe myopia. So minus 17 eyesight, mm-hmm. Which I wear contacts for now, but it's pretty bad eyesight. So to put it in perspective, at minus 19, you can actually qualify for the Paralympics. So I was thrown a bit of a curveball early on, and I always think it's an important story to tell because it taught me a lot going through that challenge. So I got Coke bottle glasses at age 6 months, and spent my early years through school really struggling, actually, from a literacy perspective as well, because horrible eyesight. Even with glasses, it was hard to see a chalkboard. It was hard to read properly. I also suffered from dyslexia and ADD as a kid. So I wasn't the most academic kid. But what I did start to love was sport. And I loved business. I was born into a business family. My father was a man that came from Brisbane to Canberra homeless at 16 because he wanted to chase his dreams as a builder. So I was born into a family where anything was possible as long as we set our minds to it. We saw the hard work. Dad was a, you know, incredibly and still, you know, still is a hardworking man, and we had a really simple upbringing. Life changed around 14. I got contact lenses, and you know, I actually, pardon the pun, could see the world differently. And I built this massive amount of confidence back in myself that I didn't really have. I was quite a sheltered kid. And then at about 15 years old, I was playing rugby, and I was on a pitch one Saturday morning, and I felt my chest beat very weirdly, and it almost, I put it in perspective that it felt like a butterfly on Red Bull. And I had this immense beating of my chest and thought, and I was quite short of breath, thought this is really bad, and went off the pitch, and there was a doctor who was on the sidelines and clocked my heart at 300 beats a minute. So I was rushed to hospital, and I was still in a high heart rate, and they clocked it at about 280 beats a minute, and it was pretty serious, you know. So for those who don't know, to get your max heart rate, it's 220 beats minus your age, and they say when you're exercising, you should never go really above 80 or 90%. So I had a problem, and I was rushed up to Westmead in Sydney, and they did a study on my heart, and they learned that I had a condition called supraventricular tachycardia. And without going into the details of the medical side, you know, once again, as a 15-year-old kid, I was thrown another big curveball from a health perspective. I wasn't able to play rugby again. It was the one thing that kept me very confident. And I was almost stuck back in that lack of confidence that I had as a younger kid. And, you know, back then, you know, I was in a family who was very optimistic, but I had to build the confidence myself. And I found things like the internet. I found things like garage sales, and I still loved sport. And there was a bit of a theme that helped me find hobbies, really, you know, because school wasn't a hobby for me.
Were you still going to school?
Yeah, I was still going to school. You know, I was struggling academically, but I was still going to school, and I was a bit of a rogue kid.
So, but were you, so, like, you were wearing your contacts, obviously, so you had that confidence, even though you couldn't do wrong. But did you have a bigger circle of friends then by that stage?
I around 17 years old, I started to get a bit more of a friendship circle, and then you know, became a bit of a larrikin and built a wilder, you know, a wider kind of friendship circle. Mm-hmm. And so by about 18, it was, you know, I was good. But I always had a bit of a, I like to build my own a little bit as well. And that was when I found the internet. So eBay was just launching, and I used to go out to garage sales on weekends and find undervalued products and scrub them up and put them on eBay and all the classifieds and in Canberra and the paper. And, you know, people would be coming over every Tuesday buying stuff. And I loved the buying and selling trade. That was what was my new hobby. Mm. So then fast forward through school, I failed year 12, albeit tried to get a university score, got 42%, didn't allow me to go in anywhere. And thought, you know, what am I going to do? So I was a laborer for my dad's business for about 18 months. And then at around 20, 21, I actually moved over to Hawaii and volunteered in a kids camp. I just thought, you know, what the heck, I'm going to go figure out something new. And I found this really cool camp, an adventure camp, and thought, you know, I'm going to go away. It's going to help me grow. And it was over there that I really discovered my true purpose, which was getting people ignited into activity and passion through bringing people together. And I thought, you know, I really want to make my mark in the world differently. You know, and I also was able to spend a lot of time with myself, understanding what my purpose was. Mm-hmm. And having faced some health challenges early on that had almost killed me, you look life quickly in the eyes and go, life's short. You know, what are we really here for? So I came back, I was 22, finally got into university as a mature age student, into sports science and physiotherapy with grand ambitions to be a physiotherapist. And then about 6 weeks in, I had a bit of an idea for a t-shirt company, and everyone used to call me Mick on the go because I was always on the go. I thought
your mates or your
parents? Yeah, your parents, friends, everyone. You know, uni students, everyone knew I was just this go kid, and I had a lot of energy by then, a lot more confidence. And I thought, well, this is a great idea. Maybe I'll start printing some t-shirts for some friends that were involved in some sports teams and were finding it difficult to get a really quick turnaround of printed t-shirts. So I said to them, oh, look, I'll set up a business and I'll do it for you. And I've just found a way through a friend who had a screen printer. I had $150 in the bank. I registered the business name, which was $142. And I had $8 remaining, which bought my first client a cup of coffee and myself a cup of coffee. Unfortunately enough, he placed an order, which was $500, and it made me a couple hundred dollars of profit, and I was able to kind of build it. But what I soon realized was through the customer service, through the hustle of your own business, through having a product you could put your name on, I was immensely excited, and I discovered this thing that I had never felt before, which was business. You know, one of the things that I've gone through in my book is trusting the dots connect, and someone who received a t-shirt in one of my first orders had a job at a council, and they'd pre-sold 500 cycling kits for a very large sports event. And it was a council, you know, that had a strong amount of money for this product, but the procurement manager left without ordering them. So they were very stuck. They had this event in 4 weeks. No one in the world could manufacture custom cycle apparel in less than 12 to 14 weeks. And they gave me a call one day, and I had set up a little garage office in my parents' house. And they said, you know, Mick, do you think you could produce these items? And I said, oh, look, I'll go chat to production and get back to you. And at this point, production was, you know, mum up in the kitchen, and she said to me, Mick, you couldn't even sew the buttons on your polo shirts. How are you going to manufacture 500 cycling outfits? Anyway, long and short, you know, that some of the ADD and obsession I had as a kid in random areas drove me to learn this industry overnight. And I found some manufacturers, 90% said I was stupid and crazy and they wouldn't help me. And I was lucky to find one that said there was a small chance, and that was enough for me to take a bet. And I learned the industry within the 4 weeks. I committed to the order. It was a $50,000 order. They paid me up front, and I thought, wow, this is easy. You know, the most amount of money I'd ever dreamed of in my bank account at that point. But the hard work began, and I delivered that order 30 minutes before it started. And that was where OTG was really born. I thought, if these customers have had this problem before, certainly there's a lot out there. I just fell into an industry that was very outdated.
So OTG, the listeners haven't heard of that before. So that's on the go.
Yeah, so On The Go Custom Apparel is a e-commerce business that is a customization platform, really, now for people to design their own apparel and uniforms online. And we have our own software that we've built ourselves. It's proprietary, and our own directly integrated manufacturers who produce over about 1 million options, from t-shirts to polo shirts to hoodies. And we've got customers who are, you know, large, very big corporate organizations like LinkedIn and Microsoft and Google and Facebook, to insurance companies, to mining companies, all the way down to grassroots sports teams who just order their soccer kits on our website for their weekend play.
Mm-hmm. So your physiotherapy career?
Canned. But I am getting married to a physiotherapist. So somewhere in the chain.
There you go. There's the dots connecting.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Maybe one day we'll have On The Go physiotherapy.
Yeah. So how long were you at uni then for? Were you, after 6 weeks did you
about
do?
Yeah, so I lasted one semester.
Right.
And what I did stupidly was went into the next semester into a business course. So I thought, sports science isn't for me, I'm going to be a businessman. So I went and did commerce, and I did 4 units, and I was in an introduction to international business course, and the lecturer was talking about international business, and I was at the same time dealing with Chinese manufacturers, and he thought he knew it all, but he'd never been to overseas to do business. And I just thought, this is not the learning I want. So I still remember one day he calmly disagreed with me on something, packed my books up, left the university, never to go back. I went back about a year later to sign them as a customer, and I stupidly didn't unenroll, so I got hit with a hex bill shortly after, because I didn't unroll. So
that's a good note for listeners.
Yeah. If you're going to drop out of university, make sure you do it before the date where they actually start charging you.
Yeah, start before you're ready. Just make a note of that one as well.
Yep.
Well, very similar to me, because I went to uni after getting, I got a little more than you. I got 56% in my HSC, not 42. So I have one up on you there. But I lasted one semester, went back as a mature age student as well to do business about 4 years later. And I was getting distinctions and credits. Why? Because I would go to the lecturer and I'd ask them, you know, what about this assignment and this paper that you're looking for? They would tell me what I needed to do, and I gave them what they needed to hear. I wasn't learning anything.
Yeah.
I just said, forget that.
You were feeling a need,
So I was just like,
smart.
I'm not learning anything. So
smart to get the piece of paper, but not necessarily to get the intellectual learnings.
So I dropped out.
Yeah.
And I traveled around the world for 3.5 years, and that was my university degree.
So yeah.
I'm with you on that one.
It's an interesting thing. Younger people, the gap year I had changed my life, and my voice to a lot of younger people is don't spend time following what others do and the corporate pathway that you have to go to uni, you have to save and buy a house, you have to get a job and start here and grow. You know, it's actually go learn and discover yourself would be the best investment you make.
I've got to give our listeners some perspective. This is a podcast. It's not a video interview. Let's give everyone a bit of context here. So I'm 55, right? And you're saying about the young ones. Mick, how old are you?
I'm 28, except this year I'm 29.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you could say next year you're 30, you see? So then,
that's right. Yeah, I know that. Someone said that to me last night. I was at an event and someone said, oh, wow, have you thought about your 30th birthday? And I just almost was sick for a moment.
That was like me at my 20th. I thought, oh, my God, my life is passing by. But by the time I got to 30, I was pretty chuffed.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think everyone should understand, but you got to understand, Mick has packed in a lot. He is 28 going on 29, and he's talking about, and in his book, he's talking about the young ones or people who are starting out. So what's great for me, even though we're both entrepreneurs, we love business, but the lessons are all there. The universal truths, those universal lessons. And from coming from your perspective, I find that really interesting to dig a little deeper. So what, without giving too much about the book away, because there's a lot in the book, but what are some of those at the age that you are now and talking to budding entrepreneurs who are trying to emulate what you've done and what Booktopia has done, what are some of those kind of things that stand out for you that you'd like to kind of touch on that people could have in their toolkit?
Yeah, look, I think there's so many lessons, and you know what I tried to do with the book was actually rather than making it a story, was really make it a toolkit and some little stories that back it up. I think a couple of things that have worked just really well for me, just to be honest, is I built it into a bit of a acronym, but it's the four P's, which is purpose, people, planet, profit. So for me, anything I do or touch is focused around those four elements, and they live and breathe on my wall, on my phone, everywhere I look at. And I'm constantly, it's my accountability to myself is those four pillars. And what I mean by it is purpose. You know, why are you here or why are you doing this? And what's the greater view of it all? And that really helps as an individual as it does in a business, right? Because great businesses have a purpose. It's bigger than a revenue target. It's bigger than a big heritageous goal. It's a bigger belief. And I think as an individual, it's important to have that as well. Then we've got people, which is who are the people around me? You know, what's the impact on me? You know, one of the most undervalued thing I think in people's life is time and people. We constantly want to save money or invest money and make money or progress our careers, but sometimes people aren't measuring the things that are in us every day, which is time and people.
Does that include your customers in that when you think about that or and suppliers? Or
I think looking at a business, absolutely. Right. Yeah, it does. I think it's about who do we want to work with and who don't we want to work with? Mm-hmm. And then as an individual, it's about who's in my, you know, the old adage of the average of the five people you spend most time with is pretty true, right? If you spend time with idiots, you won't have, you know, your dreams and ambitions might not be pumped up. If you spend time with people who have done great things that you're inspired by, you know, they're not going to be criticized. So, and it will help you get to your goals faster. And for me, people's been everything. I've been very lucky. You know, I was a 22-year-old kid in a back office garage in Canberra with nothing, actually zero, not a very wealthy family, just an ambitious and positive family. Wasn't handed anything. I hadn't raised capital. I hadn't been in business. It was a poor economy, all these things. Like, so the odds were completely against me. But the thing that I did have was great people. And then as I've grown, I've constantly reached out and tried to continue to build good people. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had it perfect all the way, of course. So then planet, which for me is pretty important, which is connecting to nature, building, you know, sustainable businesses, building, and then also connecting to nature as an individual, because for me, that's meditation of, you know, I'm a mad mountain bike rider. I love surfing. I love the ocean. I love nature. Helps keep me honest. It helps me switch off. And then in businesses as well, it's about what can we be doing, in our business to be honest to the planet. And then profit. How do we make money out of all this? So how do we as a, if it's a career, how do we find what we love doing, find the right people to get there, connect to nature, and also make money. If it's a business or if it's whatever your ambitions are. And I think that the profit part of it's all about, if you want to be a millionaire, why do you want to be a millionaire? Because if you don't have the purpose part right, you might become a millionaire for the wrong reasons. If it's just about being financially independent, because you want to live your dreams or build a bit, you know, it's, you've got to think about wealth, but you can't. So what I like to do, it's like, if they're all evenly balanced, life's good. You know, if you feel like you're doing good work, if you feel like you've got good people around you and you're connected to nature and you're making money, life's good. Yeah. If you're too one way versed, it can counterbalance, and that naturally sometimes it has.
Yeah. In fact, just to give you a break as well, I'll add to that. So because, there's a guy called Buckminster Fuller. He died. He was an inventor, a genius, and invented many things. And I did some training with a guy called Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad, who was a huge student.
Sold a few books.
Sold many books. I studied with him before he wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad, about 6 or 7 years before he wrote it. So one of the things, I went to the business school for entrepreneurs that he ran for 16 days in Hawaii, and they talked about Buckminster Fuller. And Bucky had this thing, and it was basically there's a minimum 4 points for something to exist. So one point, point A, or say people, for example, one of your P's, doesn't exist. It only exists in conversation. Point A. Point B you know, a line, point between two lines, people and profit, right? Two. Point C, so planet, in your case, this is your model. C, and then the fourth one was profit.
Purpose.
Purpose. So Bucky says minimum 4 points. So you can't have, nothing can exist unless there's four things.
Yeah.
Or 4 points.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you have three, in your case, you were talking about those three things, and that you didn't do the fourth, something would be missing. There'd be,
correct.
You'd only you focus on that. So I have quite often used that model and go, okay, what is the fourth one? And to add to that, should, so that's a called a tetrahedron, that triangle, four-sided.
How do you spell that?
Tetrahedron. Look it up.
Yeah.
Let Google do the work. Should that tetrahedron have one area that is super, super developed? Let's just say, I don't know, you focus on profit. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is, profit, profit, profit. The issue is that, and I'm describing it here, so it's easy for you and I to see, but if one part of that triangle was very, very, like the pyramid was very lopsided, very tall, it's easy to knock it over.
Correct.
So therefore, if you're really big on profit, but you've kind of, yes, we do planet, or yes, we do peak, but you do it not so great, you're only as strong as your weakest points.
Yeah.
And you can only go as high. So it's really important as expand your business out is to go, okay, all right, we've done a lot of, for us, it's a lot of philanthropic work. So for me, that's your planet, giving back. And so therefore, our philanthropy, all right, that's going good now. Probably need to work a little bit more on our people. And you slowly move out that tetrahedron and you become bigger and bigger.
Yeah, correct. And it's also, for me, it's been a personal scorecard as well. So I often, when I'm too stressed or if I've been under the pump or a lot of travel, not feeling good, I'll look at that and go, are things aligned? When I look at partners we want to work with, you know, be it investors, be it, you know, larger partners or businesses I want to invest in, whatever it is do I feel like those things are aligned? You know, so that's one of the big kind of tools in there. I think the other big part of it is networking. You know, I've been a notorious networker and
well, that's your people, obviously. In your
community. Yeah, it is. And I think that I go back to people will make or break you. And in a business, the job is to have, you know, as many raving fans as possible about you, because it'll help you hire more people, it'll help you have more people invest in you, it'll have more customers love you. And that's really a job of a CEO, you know, is to sell dreams to investors, vision to staff, products to customers, right? So you've got to be a people person.
That's a great point. So the question I asked was, you know, what are some of those nuggets? And we've come to the end of our first week's session. So it's a great point to end, and then we can pick it up again next week. Thank you, Mick Spencer.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.